Stillman and Company, delivered by TriStar Moving, ESPN 102.5 The Game. The Vols fall to Texas by the final 8-4. And I felt early in the game, Caroline, when Tennessee got up 2-0, I felt like, okay, that's what they needed. They needed the bats to show up. We knew they were a hard-hitting club. The thing we knew going into this was the level of competition was going to be better than Wright State. It was going to be better than LSU. The ballpark was going to be larger. Those bats, the guys like Jake Rucker and Drew Gilbert that had come through for Tennessee in the first two rounds, they were going to have to show up in Omaha, and they were going to have to hit their way to a championship. And I got weary throughout the week that I wasn't sure they could do it. They scored 4 runs in 2 games. That is not hitting your way to a title. Tennessee out. Pitching was so-so. I thought the pitching was okay. I thought Chad Dallas was good in game one. I thought the pitching today struggled. Blade Tidwell, I thought, you know, he was okay. And the bullpen, and then the coaches out on the field arguing with the umpires. And I'm going to say this once, and people are going to get mad. Tennessee lost because they weren't good enough. They weren't a complete enough team. Vanderbilt lost yesterday because they weren't good enough yesterday. Vanderbilt's team is good enough to win the championship. Now, they probably won't, but they're good enough to. I think it's pretty evident Tennessee's team was not good enough. They were good enough to get to the College World Series, like an NFL team that's good enough to get to the playoffs, but they weren't good enough to win the whole thing. Here's what Coach Tony Vitello had to say after the Vols' 8-4 loss to Texas.
Yeah, congrats to Texas. Their guys showed up, wanted to win the game, as did ours, and they were able to get the job done today. More importantly for me, thank you to Vol fans. The Vol walk on football Saturday is pretty impressive. It's a tradition that's gone on for a long time. But these kids somehow inspired the Vol walk for baseball to be created, and it's a pretty incredible sight and emotional thing. So thank you to those people, but also the people that just helped boost up our program into being an Omaha-type program. We hope to be that for multiple years, not just this year. So can't make any promises, but obviously we'd like to do better next time. But don't want our kids to have any sort of guilt. You know, they're good kids. You got a guy apologizing, and I'm apologizing to them, and I think that's what – you know, makes a good team, is when you got each other's back and you want to see the guy next to you succeed more than you want it for yourself. And disappointing day, you know, probably a lot of social media stuff can make these guys seem like they kind of want to be the bad boys. But there's just a bunch of kids that want to win for each other. And some guys that off the field, you take that jersey off, they're pretty soft and they're pretty good kids. But when they throw it on, they do everything they can to win for Tennessee and to win for each other. And I'm honored to have been around them for 50 wins and obviously one loss too many. Thank you.
We'll move to questions now. Mike Wilson.
Yeah, Tony, when you were standing out there in the outfield, just kind of distant from your team, all huddling together, what was going through your mind? And how do you keep a season like this in perspective with what you did versus how it ended?
I think it's hard because no disrespect to the opponent, just didn't envision it today. And even in the 9th inning, maybe you get 2 outs and nobody's on. You start thinking, what do I say to the guys or anything like that? But we just, I mean, nothing's packed. I can tell you that. I got no idea how much longer we'll stay here, but feel unprepared. Kind of like our 2 games. We didn't play that great. Even though a lot of preparation time was put in, if the results don't go well, you have to look at yourself as a coach and you know, wish you made different decisions because the ones you made didn't work. But you get to that point, I really didn't have anything intelligent to say to the guys. I just, you know, the old cliche, man, you go to a place, you'd like to leave it better than you found it. And holy cow, did these kids do that. So I was just out there looking after them, you know, wanting to be able to do something to help. But at that point, they just wanted to share some time with one another. And, you know, I mentioned to them in the locker room there that we need to do something else to get together as a group rather than just kind of slamming the door shut on this thing. You know, whether it's honoring the fans or the team or just getting together for a meal and being together one more time.
Wes Rucker.
Yeah, Tony, was anything about, I know emotion has fed y'all as a team so many times this season in a positive way. Did any of that create any negative things today, or was that, were those two separate things, the execution not being great and then some of the emotion?
No, I don't think so. I think it's either there or it's not. And I there's no way I can count on one hand total or how many digits you got. I mean, 2-3 times the guys didn't show up with kind of their attitude or their behavior. I mean, certainly there was fluctuation in skill and performance, but they just found a way for almost 70 games, however many it was, to show up and play Vol baseball, if that's what you want to call it. And we didn't do that game one here in Omaha for whatever reason. I mean, we sat and talked forever. It just wasn't there. So the goal today obviously is to win the game, but you know, we kind of put the scoreboard in our back pocket and just wanted to make sure the guys showed up with, you know, the attitude that we're used to, and they did that. And so that's why the emotion was high and the way things were. And I think, you know, you get deflated in certain situations. But I didn't see anything that, you know, was like, you know, a big weight on our shoulders holding us down, for lack of a better phrase.
Ryan Shumpert.
From your vantage point, just what did you see on the plate to plate in the fourth inning? And did you feel like that kind of took some juice out of your team and or anything like that?
Well, I thought it was a really clean relay. I mean, Jordan Beck, you know, got over there in a hurry. You know, got it to our infielders. They make a clean throw. Pav makes a clean tag. So you kind of anticipated the thing being an out. Unfortunately, we've got replay in the dugout, and I think you're better off as team or coaches not seeing that stuff when they throw it up on the scoreboard or in the corner. But obviously, it's one more run. I don't have a scale to weigh, you know, how much of a punch in the gut that was to our guys or how much of a detriment that was, other than just what was on the scoreboard. But, you know, 5-4 is different than 6-4.
Trey Wallace.
Hey, Tony, just kind of looking at where you guys stood all season long and coming into this, how did you think – two questions. How did you think your batters were looking at pitches coming into today and getting through the Texas game? And then also, when you kind of look back at your time this season with Tennessee, what are you going to remember the most about being around these kids?
Sure. You know, I think with the hitters, the thing they did different today was kind of stay to the baseball a little bit more. I don't know that you'd call it staying within yourself from my vantage point, but guys got off cleaner swings. They were more sure of themselves and their takes. And really, again, I think they just got back to being themselves. It obviously wasn't good enough, but it wasn't anything, you know, on the superstar side, but it also wasn't where you saw guys, you know, doing things on certain pitches that you would question. So, and then, you know, as far as what I would remember with these guys, that's a tough thing to point out, you know, one deal, other than as a coach, you're always trying to learn. And I learned a ton from the group on just how to get things done, how to act, how to respond in certain situations. And then, you know, there's a meme for all the people that don't like us that can, well, they can't see any tears yet, but was locked up in that condo for a long time, man. Long time. And then we had to watch these guys hit BP on the field by themselves, play catch, couldn't do anything. And then you got to be around them for a whole year. And it was a pleasure cruise. As much as you know, get angry at certain things or you got to go to COVID testing and stuff like that, it was a good time. It was a really good time to be around those guys. And they created something. So you get handed the baton, you run with it. That's one thing. And kudos to all those people that have done that. But these kids literally invented things. And they did it in a really fun fashion. So.
Troy Provost, Heron.
Hey, Tony. Just want to go back to that fourth inning. And you mentioned the perception about you guys being the bad boys and whatnot. When Ross gets tossed there, are you at all surprised that the guys didn't respond to that? well, and kind of just what, and kind of all the bad luck and whatever happened after that moment?
Yeah, I mean, just because a guy gets thrown out, it doesn't mean the next guy's going to hit a home run. I think Ross acted like he did all year long. So, and a couple of those guys know him from his playing days. So, you know, maybe that's kind of a thing. But the guy was brought on to give us a brand name. So, you know, from my vantage point from prior to, I certainly appreciate the work that was put into the program before we got here. But in my opinion, there needed to be a little more spice. And that's why that guy was added. And I think he brings that every day. So in that particular situation, the eyes were on him and he was frustrated. We brought in a guy to hit the mitt. And I think Ross felt like he was hitting the mitt. And so if anything, standing up for his guy and also ensuring that we at least brought some passion to the field today. So whether it went awry or we misbehaved or whatever it might be, no one's getting on that bus going back to the hotel saying, you know, we didn't show up or we weren't into it or we didn't have any fight to us.
We'll go two more questions. Ben McKee.
Yeah, Tony, just what did you see from Blade and Sean that maybe led to a lack of command there on the mound? And do you think Sean maybe just ran out of juice there towards the end?
You know, I think Blade, you know, was throwing the ball all right. They were on him for whatever reason. I think he was getting frustrated about certain things. And then a third thing was there was just a handful of pitches where he didn't have the conviction that I've seen out of him, you know, in the past few weeks. That was just kind of my read. And we felt good about the fact that it was a start to a new game. And the whole goal was, again, to get somebody out there to hit the mitt. And, you know, I think – in both situations, the big thing was we were one pitch away from, you know, getting out of two innings that a lot of damage was done. And, you know, we threw it over the plate, which is what got us here. And they were able to put a couple good swings on balls.
Final question, Mike Wilson.
Yeah, Tony, have you had any communication with LSU regarding its vacant coaching position? And do you expect to be the head coach at Tennessee next season?
No, I have not had zero. And, you know, I just made an idiot out of myself, at least for all the masculine folks watching, by getting teary-eyed about these kids. And that's where my focus has been. So, like I said, the social life hasn't been existent for quite some time, well before our opening day game. And a part of that is I want to do as good of a job as I can for the school that gave me a chance. And I want to do as good of a job I can for a group that we thought could go pretty far. And then, you know, the way the season evolved, like I said, I mean, the emotions, certainly not fake. I don't know if it's embarrassing or not, but it's coming from a place where that's my number one concern is these guys. And I'll go back to the room, and anyone who knows me, it'll be bad how much I critique myself, and it hurts. So I'm certainly not going to waste energy before a game or any other game having regrets that, you know, my mind wasn't right or we weren't prepared the right way to go into whatever game it might be.
Tennessee coach Tony Vitello after their loss against Texas. I love that guy. Now, I thought he needed to calm down a little bit on the field. But, I mean, that guy, again, I mean, there's going to be some adversity coming to him in the future. I mean, like every coach goes through this. And I've seen he reminds me so much of Dan McDonald, who I saw, gosh, I want to say like maybe Dan's second year was my first year on campus at Louisville and got to know Dan very well. Dan is one of the highest paid coaches in college baseball. He and Tim Corbin are right there, 1-2. Been to a bunch of College World Series, great, you know, first round picks, all kinds of stuff. He reminds me a lot of Dan McDonald, you know, very high energy, you know, aggressive. His teams play like him. And I just thought, again, I'm not a huge, you know, win the press conference or all that kind of stuff. But, wow, I thought Tony Vitello, for having lost an emotional game the way they lost it, I thought that was really well said by Tony Vitello. 615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Our reaction to Tony Vitello's press conference, to the Vols loss. We'll get to that next. Stillman & Company, we're live from the wholesaling studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And, of course, we are streaming on the Game Nashville app. Spielman and Company, we are delivered by TriStar Moving. The Vols fall 8-4 to the number two team in the country, the Texas Longhorns. Join 102.5 The Game tomorrow from 5 to 7 for the Nashville SC pre-match party at the Hard Rock Cafe downtown. Party before the match on Broadway and get some game swag. Plus, register to win a pair of tickets to an upcoming Nashville SC home game. Then head over to Nissan Stadium for the 7:30 match. Get your tickets now, NashvilleSC.com. And tune in to the game on ESPN 94.9. Vols are out. Now, in fairness, they lost a really close game where they just never got the big hit to Virginia, and then Virginia broke it open. Then Tennessee lost to the number two team in the country. How do we feel about the Vols? And I'm not a big, you know, good season guys. I'm not a big good season guy. I feel like we all know that. Like, when you end up in the College World Series and you haven't been there in decades, you don't need me to tell you good season. It's like if you lose the Super Bowl, you don't need me to say, good season, guys, you got to the Super Bowl. No, like, they know. Do you think Tennessee maxed out their potential here at the College World Series? Like, if Vanderbilt loses tomorrow, and I'm not turning this into like a Vanderbilt versus UT thing, but if Vanderbilt loses tomorrow to Stanford and is out, Vanderbilt will have underperformed at the College World Series, capable to their talent. Did Tennessee underperform, or did they max out this season and getting to the College World Series was pretty much the best this roster could do?
This roster, I didn't expect Tennessee baseball to win at all. I think we talked about it pre-Omaha that it felt like it would take them a little bit of time to kind of get used to the success, get used to the environment. And we said, you don't have time to get used to it. So I think that alone, just this team having been so inexperienced in the postseason and so inexperienced on big stages like that, was going to hurt them.
Was it the big stage?
Omaha?
Do you think the big stage is why they didn't come through? Or do you think it was that they're good, but they're just not there yet? I mean, Vanderbilt, 2011, their first appearance in the College World Series, they got knocked out too.
Yeah. I think that they are good, but they are not there yet. Now, if you're to ask me, have they maxed out their potential as a franchise, that they, you know, they can go to Omaha, but they're not going to win it? I don't think so. I think that this is really only the beginning, because I think once you prove your success, and if Tony Vitello does stay in Knoxville and they do commit themselves to improving the facilities and making Lindsey Nelson a little bit bigger, then it is only the beginning, because that's when you get these big name recruits. And Tony Vitello can start to create I don't want to say dynasty, but create a franchise in Tennessee baseball that the expectation for us is to go to Omaha. And previously that wasn't the case. So I think it's only the beginning in terms of getting recruits and getting big time players. But this year, yeah, I think that that was kind of their ceiling. I expected them to maybe win at least one game, but it's kind of where I saw them.
When I was a fan, the first year that Vanderbilt broke through, and this was the first year Tennessee broke through the Tony Vitello era, and I think Tennessee's going to keep Tony Vitello. I think that Tennessee, look, money has never been a problem for Tennessee sports. It's never been a problem in football. It's never been a problem in basketball. It's never been a problem in women's basketball. It's not going to be a problem with Tony Vitello, I would assume. But this feels like the first breakthrough year for Tony Vitello. And I tell people it's funny because everybody looks at Tim Corbin, and I like Tim Corbin. I think Tim Corbin's a good coach. I mean, I've won a Tim Corbin autographed jersey in a silent auction. Like, I'm a Tim Corbin fan. But I think everybody sometimes looks at Tim Corbin like he is John Wooden of baseball. And I think that's ridiculous sometimes. No disrespect to Tim.
Mm-hmm.
But the year that Vanderbilt broke through was 2004. That was Ryan Mullins, Warner Jones, Jeremy Sowers. That group was not the group that would ultimately be when Vanderbilt became a national contender with David Price and Dominic De La Osa and Mike Minor and Ryan Flaherty and Pedro Alvarez. Like, that was the number one seed. That breakthrough team for Tim Corbin lost in the Super Regional in two games to Texas, got housed. As a fan at the time, I was like, oh man, I thought Vanderbilt would have a better showing. But they didn't. But everybody was happy with how Vanderbilt played. Vanderbilt, that was 2004. Vanderbilt did not go to Omaha until 2011.
That's crazy.
That's 7 years. Now, again, remember, everybody, again, looks at Corbin as if he's like John Wooden. And I like Tim Corbin. I think I need to continue to say this for the record. I like Tim Corbin. But sometimes they look at him as if he is like the Gandhi of baseball coaching. And every time I hear that, I think, you know, let's be realistic. Corbin's won 2 national titles. He's built one of the top programs in the country. Tony Vitello's on a similar path. I mean, Tony Vitello, this was the breakthrough year. It was year essentially 3 because last year got canceled. So year 3, 4-ish, is the breakthrough year. It took Vanderbilt 3 years under Corbin to break through. Took him 7 more years to get to Omaha. That should be the expectation for Vitello. But I worry sometimes that the expectation is now going to be, okay, now Tennessee's got to go to Omaha next year to build off of this year. And I don't think college baseball works like that.
No.
Now,
8 teams go to Omaha, and a lot of really good Arkansas did not go to Omaha.
It's a hard sport. I mean, I just compared Tony Vitello to Dan McDonald. And I know Dan McDonald very well. And I think Dan McDonald is one of the best coaches in the country. He's paid like he's one of the best coaches in the country. He works like he's one of the best coaches in the country. I mean, you know, he's got the skins on the wall. He doesn't have a title, but he's been to Omaha a bunch. He's got the first round draft picks. He's got the program. He's got a lot. Dan McDonald went, I believe, his 2nd year at Louisville. He went, maybe his 1st year, he went to Omaha. They didn't go back until 2013. So he went in 07. They didn't go back until 13. They went in 13. They went in 14. I believe they went in 17 and 18. They definitely went in 19. And every time they run into Vanderbilt or they run into somebody, it's hard. It's hard. Dan McDonald's top assistant was Chris Lemonis, who is now the head coach at Mississippi State. By the way, Mississippi State's pretty good too. I know Dan McDonald very well. As I said in the last segment, I know Dan very well. I have the utmost amount of respect for Dan McDonald. I think Dan McDonald is a hard worker. I think he's a very energetic guy. I think he wants things done his way. And I've been around a lot of coaches who want things done their way. A lot of successful coaches. Dan's one of them. I feel very similarly listening to Tony Vitello that I feel about Dan McDonald. And by the way, Dan McDonald's the one guy who every time there's a big coaching opening in college baseball, his name is always mentioned, and Louisville always gives him a new contract. So get used to that with Tony Vitello until you make him the highest paid coach in the country, and then nobody will ever talk about it. Because it'll happen with LSU. It'll happen if another SEC school, Florida, Georgia, if something like that opens up, his name will come out. But I think Tony Vitello is at Tennessee for the long haul. I think he's the right guy for the job, but be patient. Don't expect him to go to Omaha and win it next year. You got to give this guy time. It's hard. That is a hard sport. I can argue that it is harder than college football. And the reason I can argue that it's harder than college football is because in baseball, you can have the best team and lose. Like, you can have the best team and by a mile and lose. 2019 LSU, they're not losing. Like, that's just not, that team will not lose. 2020 Alabama, they're not losing. In college baseball, you're the best team and lose. Tim Corbin's done it multiple times. 2007, 2013, didn't even get to Omaha. So when I see what Tony Vitello's done, I think he's just been outstanding. I think he's been fantastic. I think they'll pay him. I think he'll stay. And I think they're going to build this program up. But it's going to take time. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. You want to react to that? We'll get to that. Plus, a lot of people want to react to the Supreme Court stuff. Mm-hmm. And what this means, Trevor had a lot to say on it. We'll get to your reaction on that next. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Stillman and Company right here on ESPN 1025 The Game. Let me tell you about Sounds Baseball. 94.9 ESPN 94.9 is your home for Nashville Sounds Baseball. Tonight, it's the Sounds and the Charlotte Knights at First Horizon Park. Pre-game show 6:50, first pitch 7:05. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 presented by Farm Bureau Health Plans and 312 Pizza Company. Stillman & Company, we're delivered by TriStar Moving. It's ESPN 1025 The Game.
Paul Feinbaum, your reaction. Greeny, I know you're a big REM fan in the 90s. They had the famous song, It's the End of the World as We Know It. This is the end of the NCAA as we know it. The funeral hasn't happened yet. The last rites have not been uttered. But it's over for the NCAA. It won't happen tomorrow. It won't happen next week. But the next lawsuit will bury the NCAA. And Judge Kavanaugh said that yesterday.
All right, that was Feinbaum today. Trevor Maddox said Feinbaum's right. And I feel like now, and this is good for talk radio, but I feel like now with all of this, we've gotten into the whole, okay, so then what if such and such, such and such, such and such? I don't know. What if? I don't know. What if? But it feels like the NCAA is done for. So a lot of people want to react to this. We had to talk about Vol baseball after they lost in Omaha, unfortunately. But now it's time to get back to your phone. 615-737-1025. Phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Caroline's on the text line. What do we have?
One texter texted in and said, if the NCAA limits athletes' pay to certain sports, etc., in that case, UConn football players do not deserve the cut of women's basketball.
So I don't understand what the NCAA's future power is going to be. That, like, I have no idea. The NCAA, let me say this. You know how sometimes people get jobs and they shouldn't? Remember Tom Brady's comment about, you're going to go with that mother? You know, like...
We've all had that moment at some point in our lives.
I'm not sure if Mark Emmert, like, ever really had a chance. Because the way all this was going with the money, the way it was flowing, and the fact that the kids weren't getting paid, and it felt kind of archaic to say, nope, it's all in the college spirit of the thing that they need to be. You know, when we see coaches making $10 million a year coaching college football, it kind of felt like, okay, like this is starting to get a little out of hand. And so even if Mark Emmert were the greatest president in the history of the NCAA, I'm not sure it would have made much of a difference in the Supreme Court saying capping how much money people can get on education is not legal. But man, he stinks. And I think to that point, the NCAA, the presidents that run the NCAA, and I don't know who they are, but they cannot figure this out. Like, at least I understand why Rob Manfred, the baseball commissioner, who I also think stinks and needs to go, at least I know why the owners of baseball like Rob Manfred. Because he doesn't come down hard on them, and because trust me, when the Houston thing happens, every other owner in baseball is thinking, what if that was me? He doesn't come down hard on him, and he's a labor negotiator, and he worked the Players Association on the last CBA.
Mm-hmm.
So when he worked the Players Association, that's all they care about. Roger Goodell is a great... See, I'm not saying Manfred's great. I think Manfred's terrible.
I think Manfred's the worst commissioner in sports.
Worse than Emmert? Now, he's not commissioner. He's the president of the NCAA. But if you had to pick between Emmert or Manfred, who would you pick?
Like, the worst?
Yes.
Emmert.
So Emmert is the worst.
Emmert's the worst.
Right.
Like in professional Silver, sports, I mean.
Adam Silver, Gary Bettman do things I don't like, but I think they
I
know what they're
them.
Doing.
Yeah.
Goodell, I think, for the most part, does a pretty good job. Like, I think Goodell has had his ebbs and flows, and I know he gets booed, but...
He's fine.
I think Goodell's good. I do. Fine, I said it. I think Goodell's good.
Whoa, hot take.
But what's not to like?
A lot of people don't like him. I mean,
well,
a lot of
Saints
people can.
Fan.
Yes, I am a Saints fan.
So that's the one thing that Goodell royally screwed up.
Yeah.
But other than, I mean, you're going to screw up. It's like being president of the United States. President of the United States is going to screw up. The guy's there for 4 years. He has to make every major decision. You don't think he's going to screw up once? It's when you consistently screw up that it becomes a problem.
But and it's when it you know, if the president of the United States screws up and it, you know, it screws your job or, you know, your workforce or your.
Sure.
Whatever, you're going to hate them.
Right.
Right.
Like, again, everybody's going to screw up. And they've had presidents that have been president who are like, yeah, I screwed that up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I should have done that.
I mean, Goodell knows he screwed up the Saints thing. So,
sure.
But whatever.
Sure. But, like, I think Goodell's pretty good. But anywho, Emmert is so bad that when push comes to shove on this, as Feinbaum said, the next lawsuit that gets in front of the Supreme Court, like, everybody already knows the NCAA is going to lose. When that next case comes... And then, like, I mean, it really feels like it's hanging on by a thread and someone's about to pull it.
Mm-hmm.
When that thread gets yanked, Emmert's going to – Emmert there has been nobody over the last 10 years has been caught with their pants down more than Mark Emmert. And I don't know how the NCAA – so the question about if the NCAA is going to cap what people are getting paid, I don't know what the role of the NCAA is going to be going forward, because I think Emmert has no clue. Emmert's got no clue. There's no way. A smart commissioner today would be on the phone with all of the conferences saying, okay, we've got to find a way to collectively bargain now. We have got to be proactive in collectively bargaining with these student athletes. Somebody's got to represent them. We have to bargain with them so that we can get everything organized now. And you know Emmert's not doing it.
No.
Because Emmert's, he's out in la-la land. He's a, and yet, here's another contract extension. For Mark Emmert, I read an article one time in which he extended the NCAA contract with CBS and Turner when he didn't have to. And it was right before the boom on sports rights. So he didn't have to agree to an extension. He extends it, and it may be the single biggest negotiating mistake in major American sports over the last 40 years. The fact that he just, yeah, oh yeah, we're making $500 million a year. All right, let's keep doing it. When they could have made billions. And yet they just got contracts. He's the worst. What's next?
Andrew texted in and says, what about conferences? Will conferences die? Will we see Alabama, Clemson, Texas, USC, and schools out there that can pay kids top money to make their own conference? Why would smaller SEC and ACC schools pay the top schools money paying schools if the payouts aren't level?
You could ask that question to the text line of Greg Sankey, and I'm not sure he would know the answer to that.
No, and I think that's a very complex question because, I mean, you look at it now, and it's pretty much, you know, it's based off of your athletic ability where you go to school. You can assume that if you go to Clemson, then you are probably a better football player than a player who plays at, you know, a D3 school. Probably. That's probably a safe assumption. So now it's completely different because there's – take athletic ability out of it. It's completely – it's leveling the playing field and also making the playing field like this at the same time.
Where would you go if you were the top recruit in the country?
Uh-huh.
Would you go somewhere you want to go? Or would you go whoever paid you the most?
I think it would have to be a combination of the two. And I think it also depends on if I don't get paid from that school, can I still go to school? Can my parents afford to send me to school? Do I need a scholarship?
So you're thinking about the little guy, not the big guy here.
I'm thinking about the players. If I have a player.
But there's a difference between Trevor Lawrence and Johnny Joe.
Yes.
So you're thinking about Johnny Joe. I'm talking about Trevor Lawrence.
Trevor Lawrence? Okay.
You go wherever you want to go. Are you
if
going?
I am Trevor Lawrence, if Valdosta State throws me the most money, I'm not going there.
Okay. UCLA.
That's where I go.
Now, Chip Kelly's got a weird system.
Mm-hmm.
May not be great for you for the NFL. They stink. But it's in Los Angeles. It's a big school. They're offering you the most money.
Well, yeah. And then again, I guess it would have to be like, do I get along with the coaches? If I think the coaches absolutely suck, I'm not going to go there. Because if I'm that good and UCLA is offering the most money, there's probably a Clemson, an Alabama, a Notre Dame that's offering me just a little bit less. So I think it would have to be a very even weighing of all of the factors of, do I see myself succeeding here under this coaching staff? Do I like this school? Are they giving me a lot of money? I think you have to weigh all the factors. If I'm Trevor Lawrence and if I have the pick of the litter, I think I would have to weigh all of my options. If I'm not Trevor Lawrence, if I'm a middle of the road, you know, I may not start my freshman year, but I can go to a D1 school, maybe not the top school in the country. Then my parents can't afford to send me to school no matter what. Like I need to get a scholarship. I'm going wherever sends me the most money.
Caroline's coming up next. 615-737-1025. Not a good day for me. Not a bad day though. Not a good day. Not a bad day. Cannot lose this week or else we're going to have to rename the show Caroline and Company for a single week.
You're going to get to rename the show Caroline and Company.
Oh, we're going to get. Oh, yes, that's how I feel about Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Did you know that Hiller is proud supporters of the Tennessee Volunteers? So even after their defeat at the College World Series, I can tell you that Hiller is as proud of the Vols as they have ever been and will continue that support. Hiller is proud to support both the Vols and the Preds. and they're proud to take care of my home, and I'm proud to have them do so. Summer weather is here, and this is the time of year when your AC system is working overtime. If your unit is nearing the end of its lifespan or starting to have trouble keeping your home cool enough, now is the time to replace it. Hiller is offering special financing on HVAC systems this summer. Get a new system installed and pay zero interest for 60 months. Do not wait until you're uncomfortable. Go and ensure you're ready for peak temperatures by visiting happyhiller.com for all of the details. As always, and again, I can promise you this because they take great care of my home. As always, happy you'll be or the service is free. Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Hiller, call the Happy Face Truck today. Not a good week for me so far in gambling. Yesterday, I took the Islanders plus 1.5 that game.
Not a great look.
Not good, Bob. Tonight, we've got Suns and Clippers. I got the Clippers plus 6. Why? I have no freaking clue. Caroline's got the Suns minus 6 yesterday. I hit on the Braves. She hit on NC State. We both missed on the Reds. Caroline is 2-2 this week. And yours truly, King Handsome, sitting there at 1-3.
Oof. You say you didn't have a great last night. I haven't had a great month.
I have not had a great month. It's time now for Caroline's.
Get in on the action. Put the money on the mahogany. What's on tap on the sports books? It's time to break it all down with Caroline's here on Stillman & Company
on ESPN
102.5 The Game and the Game Nashville app.
We've got Montreal. They've got Vegas. Give me the Golden Knights on the money line. They just narrowly won game 4, so it is tied at 2-2. Now, they're back in Vegas coming off of a nail-biter win. You know, does home ice advantage, does momentum really exist in the Stanley Cup playoffs? I don't know, but it kind of sounds nice. And after 4 games, Vegas has outshot and outscored the Habs. They've generated 127 shots to the Canadiens 107, and they've outscored the Canadiens 10-8. So Vegas has proved in 4 games that they are the better team, and I think that Game 5 is a deciding factor in the series. And I think since they're the better team, they're going to win tonight.
I'm torn. I really am. Give me Montreal plus 1.5. Only because this playoffs, Montreal has defied all the odds. There's, I think it's Carey Price.
They really have.
I swear I think it's Price. Like, we forget about Price. Price was an elite goalie for about 5 or 6 years. I mean, the best goalie in the league. I think it's Price. And hockey's weird. Give me the Canadiens, though. I don't have a ton of conviction behind that pick. I think Vegas is the better team. I think Vegas should win this. Vegas should win this series in 5 games.
Yeah.
I think Vegas is the better team. And it wouldn't surprise me if Vegas rips off the night, then goes up and knocks off Montreal in game 6. Robin Leonard had a lot to prove last game. He felt like he did, winning in overtime. Give me the Canadiens. I just think the Canadiens are that team. So give me Montreal.
Montreal has been so fun to watch. And if they do get fallen out tonight or this series, then, I mean, fans can't be upset about it. Also, we have Mississippi State and Virginia in the College World Series tonight. Give me Mississippi State on the money line. So Mississippi State just set a College World Series record for the most strikeouts against the number 2 team in the country. State got a win against a number 10 MLB pitching prospect in Ty Madden, who plays for Texas. Virginia really didn't get things moving against Tennessee until late in the game. They had one big inning, and that really secured the game for them. I think Mississippi State is the better team. Give me the Dogs.
I'm going to take Mississippi State on the money line, too. The reason I'm going to take Mississippi State, Coach Lemonis, my guy.
Your guy?
I am a big believer in Coach Lem and assistant coach Kyle Cheeseborough, who I took tennis class with in 2009, I think. I don't remember.
Wow, you took a tennis class?
I took a tennis
class. That's
fun. It was all right.
I've been getting into tennis recently.
I spent a lot of time with Cheese. Good guy. Oh, so okay. I'm going to take them Mississippi State on the money line.
Cool. We've also got Braves Mets tonight. I'm so sorry. I'm going to take the Mets on the money line. Marcus Stroman on the mound for the Mets. He has 4 starts against the Braves in his career. He is a 4-0 perfect record against the Braves with a 1.88 ERA. Mets are 21-8 at Citi Field on this year, and Atlanta's going 8-21 in their last 29 games against a starter with a whip less than 1.15. Stroman has a whip of 1.04. Atlanta has Charlie Morton on the mound. He is 5-1 with a 3.88 ERA and 9 starts. But on the road, he is 1-2 with a 4.28 ERA and 5 starts. So, feel good about the Mets.
I'm going to take the Braves plus 1.5 in this one. Charlie Morton was outstanding. I think he took a no-hitter to the seventh.
He did have an outstanding last outing.
And I'm going to go with the Braves here. I think the Braves are going to do this thing where they get themselves back to 500 and then fall right back down.
Love that.
It's what they've done all season long. So I'm going to take the Braves plus 1.5 today. And it wouldn't surprise me if they do lose, if it's the bullpen's fault, and the Mets end up walking something off. I'm covered with my plus 1.5 right there.
That's fair. That's a comfy little pick.
It is a comfy little pick from that regard. Tonight, the Red Sox at the Tampa Bay Rays. So, Wander Franco has been called up. He is the top prospect in all of baseball. I believe he'll be making his major league debut today for the Tampa Bay Rays at home against the Red Sox. He's batting second and playing third base. The Red Sox and Rays are right there at the top. The Red Sox a half a game up on the Rays. But the pitching matchup, Eduardo Rodriguez going up against Andrew Kitteridge. Kitteridge 5-1 with a 1.34 ERA. Rodriguez 5-4 with a 6.21. Last week I watched Rodriguez pitch against the Braves. He was terrible. So I'm going to take the Rays on the money line today. Wander Franco's debut. Just remember that name. A lot of people are going to say, they heard Wander Franco here first, making his debut tonight against the Red Sox. Give me the Rays.
Give me the Sox. I think the Sox have kind of been on a heater recently, so.
You're just doing that to be different.
I am being that to be different, but.
What do you know of Wander Franco?
Well, I just heard a whole lot of good things about him.
You had never heard of him before now?
No.
He's the top prospect in baseball. I think Jessica Mendoza. Now,
I actually listened to Jessica Mendoza talk about him on Get Up or First Take or whatever it was.
I think she was a little over the top the other day.
She was very high on Wander Franco. Said he was the most versatile player in the game.
She was talking about how he has an 80 hit tool, which is as good as it can get.
Right.
And she was like, he's the first 80 hit tool. Every year there's an 80 hit tool. Every year. So be the first. That's it for us. ESPN Radio coming up next. I'll get you set for basketball tonight. The Clippers and Phoenix. 7:30 coverage begins right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We'll see you tomorrow at 2:00.